to the superintendent. Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Winston. I will in turn turn the meeting over to Dr. Jane Belmore, who was the chair of our Wellness Policy Revision Committee. If you remember that this is required by the state that we produce a wellness policy, and I believe Jane will probably go into it, but we also merged into this the nutrition parts of the food policy that we brought forward, and it's all now one document. So I'll turn it over to Jane.
Okay, great. Can you hear me? If I'm this far away, do I need to be closer? How's this?
Is it on?
I don't know. Is it on? Okay. Okay. Well, I'm happy to be here tonight to talk about the local school wellness policy. And you will see that the name of our committee is the Local School Wellness Policy Writing and Revision Committee. And it kind of has that strange name because as you've reviewed the information, I'm sure you've noticed that there is information in this policy that you've had lots of time to already hear about and give input to. So the job of this committee really was to pull together information, policies, procedures that already exist in the district that address a law that comes into effect this fall. So basically our work was pulling things together, writing and revising what we already have in the district so that it is in the framework of the legislation. So I'd first like to say that this committee was great. It was a wonderful group of people who were really very interested in the well-being of our children. And we have some people here tonight, and I'd just like to mention them as I tell you who was on the committee. Bob Pellegrino, who was the PEP grant coordinator. Freddie Adelson is here tonight, the coordinator for health services for the school district. Frank Kelly, who's the director of food services, is here tonight. We had three parents on the committee, Nancy Gutnick, Sharon Brockle, who is here tonight, Jan Schaefer. We had two students who helped us out on this committee. Joe is one of those, Joe Carl Smith, and Ellie Anderson, who is also active with the Food Policy Committee. Our teachers were Joe Jensen, Peg Guzzi, and Rachel Gallagher, school nurse, principals Ann Yaley, Joy Larson, Ed Holmes, community members Kathy Andrews from Fitz City Madison, Susan Webb Lukomski from the Department of Public Health, and David Bernhardt, an MD with UW Hospital Sports Medicine. So you can see that we had a wide variety of people with lots of interest in the well-being of our students. As we look at the presentation tonight, I'm going to try to go through it quickly. I just want to tell you that first I'm going to talk about the materials that you have and some materials that I will be leaving with you. I want to highlight the federal law for those people who may not be aware of what the law is about, and then present the policy that the committee is recommending for your approval tonight, and then have time for questions and answers. So you do have, or you have received, a cover memo, which I want to talk a little bit about, the recommended draft of the policy, the appendices related to the policy, and tonight I will leave with you a three-ring binder, which is here, and this represents other information that the members of the committee did review and look through and use as we developed this policy. So that will be here for your reference, should you want it, but one of the things that you'll see as I talk about the cover memo is that the committee really felt that it was important to document their thoughts and the work that they had done for the future of broadening this policy. In addition to what you see there, you also received an executive summary, which is just a one-page summary of the policy, the work of the committee. You received a timeline which essentially outlines the procedure that we used as a committee to review the work and draft the policy. And you received a list of the committee members. The cover memo itself is really important because the committee wanted to document several things that hopefully will be useful as the district continues to look at student wellness. And one, there are like six things highlighted in the memo, and they include things like the information that we found from the Department of Public Instruction, other state agencies in other states, as well as our own information from other school districts who've implemented wellness policies, information from organizations, and making some specific suggestions that include things like if the district looks at doing some kind of assessment around wellness, we uncovered and researched several different assessment tools that are already being used, so we documented those things. So it's basically a documentation of the things that the committee felt were really important to include, but at this point in time really don't have a place in the policy as it's laid out. So before we look at the policy itself, I'd just like to highlight quickly why we're here. You've probably seen this before, and basically overweight among children aged 6 to 11 has more than doubled in the past 20 years. Overweight children and adolescents are much more likely to remain overweight or become obese adults and develop the chronic problems that go along with that. And I'm sure you've seen this statistic, 1 in 3 American children born in 2000 will develop diabetes in their lifetime. So with this, along with other information, really was the impetus for the federal law. And the Child Nutrition Act is reauthorized every 4 to 5 years. And basically, it's the law that gives us school lunch programs and breakfast programs. And while those programs are in permanent use and are not under question, what they do with the reauthorization is add things that may be important, such as this. So when they reauthorized the Act the last time in 2004, they included a requirement that all school districts receiving federal funds for meal programs would have in place no later than the first day of school in the year 2000, after June 30th, 2000. They would have in place a local school wellness policy. And that, indeed, is why we are here tonight. And what we did as a district was to create a committee, and as I said, the committee reviewed tons of information both within the district and outside of the district. We engaged in a process to write and revise several drafts. I think we ended up with the 8th draft as the one that was the final one, to recommend to you a policy that would fulfill the requirements of the law and also highlight the important work that the district is already doing in terms of student wellness and give us a process to continue that work. And I think it's important to say that the components of the law are pretty strict, and that's why we really needed to kind of pull everything together and get it into a framework. There are 5 components: nutrition, education, and physical activity goals. And you'll see those as we walk through the policy in a moment. Nutritional guidelines and assurances. Other school-based activities that are designed to promote student wellness. Number 2 and 3 you've spent a lot of time on, and you've had a lot of input into, because Freddie Adelson and Frank Kelly have worked with a group over this year to look at the comprehensive food guidelines. So some of that you are very familiar with already. But the new part is the monitoring and measuring aspect of implementing the policy. So that was really the work that the committee kind of created from looking at what was already in place in the district and then putting it into the framework of the policy. The other thing that the law requires is specific involvement of specific people in the policy development. And that is parents, students, food services staff, school board, school administrators, and the public. And you can see from our committee that we had all of those people represented. The policy does only cover food and activity for students, only available during the student's school day, at school, school-sponsored events, or MSCR programs. And the law really should be designed in a manner that the district can support. So they left it really up to the district for the reasonable aspect of what can really happen in terms of supporting student wellness. You've seen sort of the beliefs. Now, I think if you just turn to page one, we'll walk through the policy. You've seen the beliefs of the policy, the background that children and adolescents need access to healthful food. And this came directly out of the work of both the food services guidelines work as well as the PEP grant and the 5 or 6 years that we had the Safe Schools, Healthy Schools, and did a lot of work on what the district really believed in terms of student well-being. So the beliefs of the policy are there, and I believe you've seen those. We are recommending then that the board adopt a policy that provides nutrition and physical education to students, that provides for their regular physical activity, that provides guidelines for foods and beverages that meet national nutritional guidelines, and that supports as many schools and students as possible participating in the federal meals program. If you will now turn to page 7, I want to go through the monitoring and measuring implementation of the policy first, because I think if I do that, that's the part that's new to you, and I think it will help make the other parts clear if you can see how they're really going to be put into place. So there are two parts to the monitoring and measuring, and one is actually monitoring the parts of the policy that are implemented at a school level, that include classrooms and school-wide events and all kinds of other things. It also includes the curriculum aspect. So that's all covered under Part A. Part B then is the second part, and that's just the guidelines and the federal assurances that are really handled within the food services program. So Frank Kelly and his department are responsible for those. So the process that we would recommend is that basically the principal will be responsible for monitoring all parts of the wellness policy that are not actually monitored by food services. And the way we would suggest that this is done, and it is suggested in the policy, is that each school would establish a wellness committee, and that would be people at the school-based level who are knowledgeable and concerned about student wellness, to meet with the principal at least once a year. They would look at the wellness policy, determine where they're meeting the policy, if there are places where they're not meeting the guidelines, then what they might want to suggest at the school level that they would do. These people would then become part of the school improvement and implementation process, and that's a process that's already well established at every school, and it seemed to the committee that it made sense for that committee also to then think about wellness and how they've implemented the policy at their school, what kind of needs they might have as they're looking through that process. So once a year, a small group of people would look at the policy and at wellness at their school, and then also some of those people would be a part of the school improvement planning and implementation team, making action plans to address any parts of the policy that they would need to. That would be at the school level. At the district level, we're recommending that a district wellness committee be appointed by the superintendent, and that this committee would have several important functions, but they would meet at least one time a year and would include people who have the knowledge and the interest and the expertise in the area of wellness. This committee would sort of have the broader look and take a look at the implementation across the district. If there were changes that should need to be made, or this would be where the broadening of the policy might take place, if there are new aspects of student wellness that come in, this committee could kind of guide that. If there were a need for some kind of district-wide staff development around wellness, that could be a part of that committee's function. But more importantly, they would be the committee who would specifically recommend several things that are included in other parts of the policy. One of those is they would recommend the beverages and foods that would be available in vending machines and school stores. So that would be a list that they would work with on an annual basis and just make sure it's updated and up to date with the latest wellness information. And they would also, they would also look at the criteria for the added sugar content in foods. And this is something that we've talked about, and there's information out there that the committee needs to look at and make some recommendations for that piece of the policy. They would also plan for any changes that would be necessary in the policy. The other piece that you'll see as we go through the policy is in Appendix E, and we'll go through that, but it's kind of the guidelines for school parties, celebrations, those kind of things. And when you worked with a comprehensive food policy, those were a part of that, but now they've really become other school-related kinds of wellness activities. So we will have guidelines for that, which will probably need to be updated on an annual basis. And so this would be the vehicle to update any of those lists and criteria, parts of the policies that would need to be updated on an annual basis. So I just wanted to share that with you because it is important for the other parts of the policy. As we move into, if you can go back to page one again, we'll move into the nutritional guidelines. And just keep in mind that this, the guidelines, the policy relates to all food on campus, and the laws specific about that, school meals, a la carte, vending machines, student stores, concession stands, classroom parties, special events, and fundraising. So if you look back again at page one of the policy, school nutrition and education goals, what will guide us in implementing those goals will be the work of the PEP grant, and other folks in teaching and learning have been working over the years on the standards for nutrition education, and they are included in your appendices. They will be implemented somewhat differently at each of the instructional levels. And again, we see this policy as foundational, which means that there probably will be other things added to what we have here. For example, the recommendation at the elementary level is that the standards be implemented within other academic areas, FIED class, that sort of thing. That may become more specific as people start to implement the policy. So it's broad enough right now to include those kinds of changes, and the committee really hoped that it would be the case that people would continue to work with this and enrich it. So at each level, the goals and the curriculum would be handled a little bit differently. As I said, at elementary, it would be integrated into classrooms. Middle school, a committee has been working to create a new class at the sixth grade that will be implemented at the sixth grade level. It would be a wellness class. And also in your appendices, you see the kind of curriculum that they're looking to develop for that class. And at high school, it would be delivered in the health education class in ninth grade. The other piece that I would call your attention to is also included and required by the law is linking to the larger school community. And as we see that, you can see in the policy itself, it has to do with events and all school activities. And basically, it would be that we wouldn't do anything that would contradict the policy here, the wellness policy, so that we could use those school-wide events, in fact, to promote good nutrition education and serve foods that are healthy and create, you know, that healthy model and environment. So that is the intent of linking to the larger school community. And you do see there that we're focused on school-sponsored events during the school day, also MSCR. And then there's a portion there for non-school-sponsored events because we do have after-school programs in pretty much all of our schools. And while the policy, the guidelines in Section 3 of the policy, which really refer to content of foods, don't actually apply to those programs, those are other opportunities, and those after-school programs do take the opportunity to reinforce nutrition education goals. And then the last thing is parent information, and you'll see that in the other sections of the policy. We had lots of discussion about that on our committee, and we felt that it was really important to develop some consistent ways to share information about wellness with parents, get them engaged as partners, and helping us to support our students in being as healthy as they can be. The committee also made that recommendation in the cover memo that perhaps the district wellness committee could look at some specific ways that parents can get information about wellness, and maybe there's a way to have one or two avenues so that parents could come to expect that they would get that information. So that would be the nutrition and education goals of the policy. And then if you would go to the next section, section two, are the physical activity goals. And those goals would be based on the framework of our current physical education standards. And again, those are implemented differently according to the level of instruction. And you can see in the policy where elementary schools, for example, have structured physical education classes 3 times a week for 30 minutes. There is also a recommendation for time for classes at the middle school level. And then you can see that the high school activity is guided already by school board policy in terms of credits for graduation, and those are noted for you there. The co-curricular and physical activities in recess, the law does refer to those areas, and the intent of the committee was to say, you know, kids need to be active, and they need to be active both in class and outside of class, in school, outside of school, and so whatever we can do to ensure that they're is physical activity that, you know, we would want to do that. So regularly scheduled recesses. Currently, at all levels, special programs or events that promote physical activity would certainly be appropriate and encouraged. And then a variety of other physical programs, including sports and clubs that are offered after school, and structured athletic programs that would be offered. And again, parent information, similar as to the education, nutrition education, and physical education goals. And if you go to Section 3, establishes the nutrition guidelines. And this section basically is sort of a reorganization of the information that you have spent some time on this year in terms of the food, comprehensive food policy. Just to kind of hit the highlights, we want to model healthy food choices, provide nutritionally balanced meals, of course, that meet nutritional guidelines, and then promote the concept of balance, which is the idea that an occasional sweet treat is not unheard of, and so that we would want people to think about though that though in a balanced way, that we would consider the age and make and having decisions about food, and you can see that in the policy and sort of the way we've dealt with things differently at different instructional levels, to ensure that healthy food choices are available at school during the school day for students, and then to ensure that no foods or beverages that we do offer or make available during the school day actually contradict the nutrition recommendations of the policy. So this section is divided essentially into two sections, one that refers to foods available through the food service program, and then the next section that refers to foods available outside the school, the food services program. So first of all, we want to make sure that all students have access to breakfast and lunch, and that that is currently occurring, and that we continue to reinforce that and create alternatives, alternative ways to get students connected with those programs if we need to. The next part of that deals with the nutritional value of foods offered at school and the guarantee that we would comply with or exceed the dietary guidelines for Americans, which is also included in your appendices. And then it talks about the added sugar content. This is where the district wellness committee comes into play with this part of the policy, and that they would, on an annual basis, make some recommendations about added sugar content in food and recommend some criteria. Also, this has been included in the former discussions, the non-fat and low-fat milk would be promoted, and then the criteria for the a la carte items. And again, this came through discussion with the focus groups as well as the other committees that were working on this. But you'll see in the policy that there's a systematic reduction of the percent of calories from fat that will take place until the fall of 2008. And so that is systematically reducing that, the fat in the a la carte portions. The remainder of that section deals with portion size. So the food is jumping up there to keep you awake a little bit. Portion size, food allergies, and the qualifications of food service staff. And you'll see those are listed in the policy for you, but you'll also see that some of those come into play with the recommended guidelines for vending machines, and certainly the guidelines for parties and celebrations in class, looking at food allergies and portion size as well. Qualifications of food service staff. Administrative staff in the food services department shall be required to have a four-year degree in nutrition, food science, food management, or a related field. And that would become part of the policy, which I think it is already practiced now, so that would be a part of the policy. And then Section B deals with all the other things that happen in school that might in some way be related to wellness. And so we've made some recommendations about the amount of time for lunch for students, that they would have at least a 30-minute lunch break and at least 10 minutes for breakfast. There would be alternative delivery systems for that, as I said before. Food in the classroom, that's would be guided by that Appendix E, which, again, would be updated every year. And that includes really looking at the content of foods that parents bring to school for parties and that kind of thing. One important piece about that is that there will be another group who of elementary folks, principals, teachers, who will come out with a suggested list, which we think will make it very much easier for parents. These are the items that are totally wonderful to bring to school for your child's birthday celebration, that kind of thing. So that will be forthcoming as well. And then number four, the food and beverages, I think we talked about that. Again, that's where the District Wellness Committee comes in terms of making recommendations for vending machines in school stores. I believe that you have in your packet, if you do not have in your packet, you have in this notebook, there is a lot of information out about that that the committee can draw from, and I think you've already seen some of that, so they're not totally starting from scratch, and it would be really something that then through the committee process they could change and modify as they needed to. After-school programs, field trips, the guidelines in Section 3 of the policy do apply to field trips and school-sponsored events during the school day whenever MMSD provides the food, and the nutritional guidelines also apply to MSCR. Then there's some other things about foods not being used as rewards, not being used as manipulatives in the classroom. Fundraising, candy will not be given or sold to students during the school day. And after 2008, candy will not be offered as a sale as part of any school-related or fundraising activities at the elementary or middle school level. So that is a part of the policy that we're recommending. Increasing to encourage sustainable food practices through the ways that are appropriate in school. Access to facilities, and here this is a part that the law required, and we basically pulled in your current policy that governs access to school facilities, so there's nothing really new there. And then the final section is the monitoring section that I've gone over, which incorporates a school wellness committee and a district wellness committee, along with Frank Kelly and his department actually monitoring the nutritional guidelines and the food service program. So there are many resources available. The committee did a wonderful job, I think, of putting together a structure that maybe with some modifications can continue to grow and address the needs of students in this area as the district sees fit. So, I think that's the presentation. If you have any questions or would like to add anything, Art?
Ms. Avera.
I actually have a couple of comments, not questions. First of all, I want to thank you and your committee for the tremendous amount of information that you provided to us. It was quite a comprehensive packet, and it made it very easy to understand your rationale for your policy with all of the supportive information that was provided. So I appreciate that and appreciate the amount of time that you put into developing the policy. It was also, I think, very obvious that you really took into account a lot of a variety of input that you have received on both the wellness part or the physical education part and the food part, and it was nice to see a lot of that incorporated into the recommended policy. What I really liked was the fact that I loved your cover, your memo, because it really stressed continual improvement, that this is something that would be ongoing and that the district wellness committee would work hard to, you know, to continue to make this better. And I can't find the wording right now, but I think it was foundational. Mm-hmm. Used at the end of your memo, and I think that is really a very good approach. And I hope that we can support this tonight as the foundational policy, knowing that as we move forward, we'll have these committees continually evaluating ways to make it better. But I thought it was a very good policy, and I thank you for that.
Thank you. On behalf of the committee, they did a lot of hard work. I thank you.
Mr. Kyle Smith.
Sitting on this committee, I really appreciated how much input and various opinions were contributed and taken into account. I do have a couple questions. The first is there's a lot of stuff in here sort of moving the students toward only eating the cafeteria food or bringing their own lunch. And I saw a lot of stuff making the cafeteria food more healthy. I was wondering if there is anything in the policy to make the cafeteria food more desirable.
In the policy, we're hoping that desirable goes along with healthy. But no, there's nothing specifically in the policy about that.
Okay.
I guess what I would say that might address that in the policy, though, is the way that the monitoring and measuring has been set up. Because with that district committee and with the local school committees working, there's a way to get that feedback from schools if and certainly Frank Kelly and his department will be monitoring if students are not finding the food desirable.
Okay. Also, under the physical education section, if I can find it, you talked about the... let me see. It's under physical education instruction, elementary schools, it says that physical education instruction for elementary schools be provided in 3 30-minute classes each week for the duration of the school year, which is the least amount of the schools. And I was wondering the rationale behind providing less exercise to younger kids. I would have thought they would need more.
Well, this amount of time is actually along with all of the academic areas, there's a recommendation from the Department of Public Instruction around how much time and needs to be spent on each area. And there is, and Dr. Aplanap can probably provide this too in greater detail, for the elementary school, the schedule is really very tight to make sure that we're getting all of those minutes in for every academic subject, including physical education. And so that is the current recommendation from the Department of Public Instruction, and we do meet that recommendation for structured activity. But that doesn't include recess and other kinds of breaks and physical action in the classroom. So, but that's a good question. So it is really there because that's the recommendation from the Department of Public Instruction and the way it fits into the elementary school day.
Okay. I was also wondering, does the committee or you yourself have an estimate as to how much money the schools will lose from, you know, lack of sales in the school store and stuff like that? And if so, is there a way for the board to compensate for this money or provide for the schools?
As we did not do the research here in our district on that, unless Frank and his department maybe have some ideas, I don't know. But as we reviewed the research across the nation, there actually it's not proven to be true that there is a loss. So I think it really kind of depends on how things are decided and marketed and that sort of thing. But basically, other school districts have implemented changes such as the ones we're recommending, and they have not lost money. Now, there are some other ways that they're looking at compensating for any kind of decrease in sale that they may have had. But
what are those ways?
Notebook, I'm thinking there are... Frank, do you want to...
Jane, I think Joe was speaking specifically to school stores. Is that what you were talking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Specifically, I talked to the West school store coordinator, Ms. Plurd, and she said the school store would close if this policy is implemented. Which I was concerned about, and I was wondering if this would be absorbed, this loss of money, and if the loss would be non-existent, as she said.
I think one of the things that was talked about when this was actually brought forward as part of the food policy was that there are other things to sell in school stores than candy. And I think that's really what it's going to require is that our marketing classes, our organizations that are involved in the school store are going to have to do what any other business does, which is find what kind of product can sell and build their school store profits on those. And I think other school districts have found that to be very possible. There are many other things to sell in school stores, T-shirts coming to mind immediately, that can help turn a profit for the school stores that are not food-related. So that would, I think, as we discussed this earlier, there are other school districts, other schools that have found ways to keep their revenue stream right without going with food. So, and I think, as a matter of fact, one of the discussions was that maybe that would be a project of some of our marketing classes at our high schools, a very real world project to say, we've got this store, we're losing one of our revenue streams, how do we develop another revenue stream to keep the store going? That's...
And in this section of the notebook, which can go to the committee, there are step-by-step guidelines as to how to assess what's working now, how you could move to making your school stores more successful, even than they are now.
That's true. Another thing is, since this policy was started to be developed, all of the national soft drink companies have voluntarily decided to pull sugar drinks out of schools. And what is happening with them is an incredible amount of energy being put into new product development. So I think we're going to see a whole array of new waters and new what have you that I think will enable the school stores to maintain themselves.
So you don't foresee a loss in revenue in the school stores? Because in speaking to the people in the marketing, you know, even in marketing classes, it's not as though, you know, they're not trying to come up with other things. It's just that, you know, people only need so many T-shirts, whereas, you know, people can come back day after day to get the candy. I'm not saying that there's no other way for school stores to get funds. I just, in looking at it, I foresee a loss. And I was wondering, is the school going to be able to absorb that? Should it occur?
No. I'm actually, no.
Well, and I would say, too, in reviewing some of the ways that other schools and districts have dealt with that, it has included different products, as Ms. Nash was saying, the granola bar, healthier foods and healthier snacks as a part of that as well. Even and less, maybe less food, but what is there being of higher quality.
But I do really and truly believe that it is an outstanding learning opportunity for high school students. In the real world, nobody comes in to bail you out if your store isn't profitable. That's the way it works, and I think one of the best things that we can provide to high school students, particularly who are interested in that part of our business world, is how you deal with it. And to be honest, over the course of time, that's going to be an ongoing change, I think, in each one of those stores. What's popular today? What isn't selling? You've got to look at your stock. You've got to do all the things that any store down on Monroe Street does every single day. And I think that's an important learning aspect to it, too, besides the nutritional value of it. So, but I have a lot of faith from 41 years of working with students that they will figure something out. Yeah, I really do believe that.
Joe, do you have anything else?
Okay. I'm good.
All right, Ms. Mathak.
Well, I wanted to follow up on those comments because I was, excuse me, as were many of the people in this room, at the business partnerships luncheon this past spring, and I had the pleasure of sitting with the head of West High School DECA and kids from West at my table, and I asked, we'd just gone through the food policy things, and I'd asked, how is this going to affect West? Have you started thinking about this? And I have to say I was a little stunned to hear that, yes, this was probably going to affect the slushy machine and the Frappuccino machine, because that I'm, you know, God bless them for having the, you know, entrepreneurial abilities to come up with those as sales items, but I have to say that if they can think of putting in a slushy machine and a Frappuccino concession at West, they can probably figure out other food items that don't violate the policy. One of the things that I see on a daily basis, and for any high school students who are worried about this dilemma, I urge you to start doing some little expeditions to see what other things are out there. One of the most successful stands on Library Mall is a fresh fruit stand. And in fact, when the fruit man closes down for the winter, a bunch of us are out there like junkies freaking out because where are we going to get our fresh fruit? You laugh, but this is absolutely true. The guy does a good business. He has several employees. There is, and in fact, some of the younger students are some of the biggest customers. So I think that there's a range from T-shirts and pencils and things like that to just alternative food products. But that is where part of the learning part, the educational part, comes in.
Does anyone else have any other discussion? Joe?
I think that's totally true. I really respect what both of you have said about, you know, adapting what's being served and stuff like that. But what also needs to be taken into account is it's not only a challenge of changing what you're offering in the store, but you're restricted in that you can't sell food during lunch or during breakfast, the times when it would be most desirable to be bought. So it's not just a challenge of coming up with granola bars. It's a challenge of getting people to buy granola bars when they could just go home. Combined with the challenge, you know, individually, maybe the challenge of not being able to sell food during lunch would be overcomable, or the challenge of having to adapt what you're offering based on, you know, not being able to have the food, that would be overcomable. But combined, you can't sell the food that you've been making 99% of your revenue off. And even if you find a way to do so, you can't sell it during the times when it's most profitable to do so. So I have incredible amount of faith in the ingenuity and the creativity of the marketing department at our high schools, but I cannot foresee them overcoming those challenges to such a degree that there's not a loss, significant loss in revenue.
Ms. Mathiak.
I cannot speak for other board members, but I actually would be willing to, and as I recall, there are a couple things. One is that the food policy is to be phased in. It's not an overnight, it's a transitional thing. But I would be willing, as personally, my one little vote out of seven, to take a second look at that when things can be sold issue, because frankly, I would much rather that kids are eating fresh fruit and yogurt and things that may be available through a school store if our food services cannot bring itself to provide them. So I am open to revisiting that piece of it because I think that's a legitimate, much more legitimate and resonates more with me than the issue of can they sell slushies, which I love slushies, but it's hard to make an argument for that one.
Ms. Carson.
Just a question. I know there's been some discussion about federal law governing what's available during lunch hours. Is there? I don't know whether any of that has been adopted, and I guess that's my question.
There is a federal law that says you can't compete. The question has always been, and we've kind of skirted around this issue, where can't you compete? In the building, in the cafeteria, that's always been a little bit foggy, but there is a federal law that says that you can't compete during the meal periods. So it's how it's interpreted and how it will be interpreted by USDA and DPI when they come to audit in the future. They brought that to our attention before, that we were very fuzzy in what we were doing in the past.
Okay. Up to now, school stores have operated during the lunch hour and before school during breakfast?
That's my understanding. And only those that, the only ones we've had a problem with before have been those that were right in the cafeteria, and I think everybody's gotten that. I know everybody's gotten that out of there now.
Okay. So.
Let me ask a question to the superintendent. In terms of the board, in terms of this evening, were you looking for action for this to adopt this?
Yes, we were.
You were looking for that. Okay. Mr. Vang?
You know, I'd support the adoption of this policy, but I like Lucy said, I'd like to revisit it again within a year just to so that we have Joe's concerns addressed. You know, at West, I think about half a block away there, I don't know if the store is still there, and I bet if students cannot find candies in the schools, it's about 30 seconds, maybe in a minute walk to that store. And so I'm not sure if it's going to make any differences at all. But
I think the point here, I mean, obviously, if anybody wants to get a candy bar, they can bring one with them. Or they can go at any of our high schools. There certainly are candy bars within easy walking distance. I think the issue here, though, is what, in terms of nutrition, are we modeling as a school district? I mean, obviously they're all going to leave at 3:30 and go do whatever they want to. But it's what I think the idea behind the policy, at least as it relates to school, is what are we modeling as a school district to our children as good nutrition? And I mean, I think that's really part of our goal here.
And partly, how are we helping them to make those choices when they're, you know, not in school, and, you know, helping them to think about the choices that they make outside of school.
Yeah, I agree, that's true. But we won't do that simply by taking away the candies from the school stores. It's going to take more than that. Kids don't, you know, high school students don't just get used to
That's the reason why there's a whole, that's why there's a whole curriculum component.
I am in support of the policies, having kids in schools, but I think that there are established programs at schools, the school stores in particular, that they do have legitimate concerns about whether or not they're going to be able to continue to have school stores if that products are not available. And it's been a while since I've been out of school, but I would guess that the school store is as much important to the whole school culture as other programs that have been in there for a long time. And I would hate to see a school store close because of policies. And, you know, I understand that the challenge there is there for whoever's running the store, wherever it may be, and whether or not student marketing clubs or other students want to take up the challenge of changing the culture of what people should eat. And so, but all in all, I am in support of the policy.
I entertain a motion at this time, Ms. Severa. I'm sorry, Ms. Mathai.
Just a very quick observation that I think we tend to get very pessimistic about what students are interested in eating, and having had the distinct pleasure of traveling for over a week with 14 or 15 high school kids from East, from a wide range of cultures, the one thing I did find was that when they had healthy alternatives, they actually chose them more often, some because they were worried about their weight, others because they just preferred it. I don't think we should give up. Nobody's saying it's going to be an overnight change, but I think that there are enough people who are accustomed to eating healthier diets at home or in their child care centers when they are growing up, these after-school programs, at least the ones that my kids went through were much more into nutritional issues. They were way ahead of the discussions we're having here. So I think let's not give up on it. Let's not write it off. Let's see what we can do.
Ms. Carson and then Ms. Rivera.
Yeah, I think Lucy's absolutely right that, while I agree, Schwa, that passing the policy is not going to result in dramatic change in behavior, I think over time, as this is only one piece of what's happening in our society and our culture, and there is a lot more focus on nutrition and healthy lifestyles. And I think, as you know, as I think about what has happened in the whole area of teenage smoking. And again, we still have a ways to go, but we certainly have seen a dramatic change, mostly as a result of different values expressed in society about what's appropriate in terms of health. And I think it's obviously it's not only what has to happen for children and teens, but also how adults themselves begin to model different behavior. And I think it's all of it has an impact, and I think we're just one part of that. But it combined, it sends a particular message that I think is very important. I also think it's important to emphasize the point that Jane talked about earlier of balance, that, yeah, it's okay to have ice cream or a cookie or something or a candy bar. We're not eliminating chocolate from our society. But it's a question of balance, of what you eat across a day or a week. That's very important. I think that's the piece of information that we have to be concerned about and that I think our policy helps establish for us.
Ms. Avea.
I will make a motion to see if we can move this forward. I move that we approve the MMSD local school wellness policy.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Discussion. Okay. Joe.
So I really support almost 90% of this policy, 99% of this policy. I think especially the goals behind it and the rationale that's being used, the concepts, the balance, I support all of those wholeheartedly, and I agree with what all the other board members have been saying about school culture and you know, all of these aspects of our schools, especially with the nutrition. I cannot, however, I can't vote for this policy because I've talked to too many students, students whom I was elected to represent, who feel so strongly that this will make their school life worse, that this policy will hurt not only fundraising for clubs, school stores, it'll take money away from the schools because people will be going to school or won't be going down the street, as like Shaw was talking about, instead of buying their candy from a school-based store, which would therefore give money to the schools, much needed money. And all of these concerns are very present in my mind, and I cannot vote for this policy, so I will be voting nay.
Okay. Joe, let's go ahead and get your on record. Let's go ahead and get your advisory vote.
Nay.
Okay. The rest of the board. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion passes 5-0. The next item on our agenda is the schedule and process for the superintendent's evaluation. Thank you very much, Dr. Belmore. Appreciate your time, effort, and energy. Thank you very much for the